Welcome to the Growing Rural Podcast, where we focus on all things rural in South Carolina. We will discuss topics on healthcare, economy, education, and the unique culture that is our rural state. This podcast is supported by the South Carolina Center for Rural and Primary Healthcare. Please join us for today's topic.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Growing Rural Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Kevin Bennett. Our guest today is Anne Lefebvre. Anne is the Executive Director of the South Carolina Area Health Education Consortium, or what we call AHEC for short. Welcome, Anne.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So before we begin, just tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and where you grew up and why you're doing what you're doing.
Oh, well, great. So I grew up in far upstate New York, so north of Lake Placid, New York. Our closest metropolitan area to where I grew up was actually Montreal.
Wow, okay.
So I grew up in a very rural setting in upstate New York.
But it's very different rural setting than South Carolina.
It's a very different rural setting. And when you say New York, most people don't think of rural, but I actually grew up in the most rural county in the state of New York.
Right.
And so I always joke and say I know rural. I had a party line telephone until I was 13 years old. So,
which most people don't know what that is.
They don't know that is, but a lot of people in rural do. Mm-hmm. So I grew up in upstate New York, but I moved to North Carolina in 1993. So I have now lived in the South longer than I lived in the North. And so I think that counts for something. So I moved to North Carolina and worked there for a number of years doing different things, but really focusing most on a rural and underserved population. I started my work as a speech pathologist. I worked in speech therapy for years, and that's what drew me to North Carolina. I came down and worked in Currituck County School District, which is the very rural northeastern part of North Carolina. In doing that, I lived on the Outer Banks of North Carolina for 6 years.
Wow, okay.
And at that point, I felt somewhat limited in my work in speech therapy. While it's an incredibly important field and rewarding in its individual work, I felt like I was missing a greater impact. And so at that point, I went back to school at East Carolina University to study for my master's in social work. So I received my master's in social work, and I have not a dual degree, but a dual concentration in both clinical therapeutic social work and a macro system level social work. So to really look at how can we make a bigger impact with the social systems that we have.
So institutions and populations
institutions,
and those kinds of things.
And also policy.
Right.
Focusing a lot on state and federal policy and how it impacts you know, health and well-being of communities. So from there, I started working and combining my two backgrounds in the therapeutic level of social work, but really with a medical background. Because of my work, my earlier work in speech pathology, I had the medical terminology, I had a better understanding of a healthcare setting and those types of things. And so I was able to really focus on helping patients understand medical conditions. I worked heavily in infectious diseases. I worked in oncology, and I worked in nephrology.
Okay.
Really working with the social implications and a lot of the social determinants of health.
Right.
And helping patients to do that, but also at the same time navigate healthcare and deal with their social and family situations.
Right.
So with that, I started to build programs both throughout North Carolina, and was able to work on some national grants and contracts. And I came into quality while working at East Carolina University and really started focusing on some of the national quality efforts. And so I was
like quality improvement.
Quality improvement. Thank you. Yes.
Yeah.
I was a part of the Fistula First campaign and a lot of the quality improvement that happened with dialysis settings.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, end-stage renal disease is one of the most costly diseases that we have in this country as far as Medicare goes, because it's directly covered under the Medicare Trust.
And a huge burden on the patient as well.
A huge burden on the patient. The treatment is lifelong,
right.
And you know.
Unless they get a transplant or the
even, yeah, you're right. Except for transplants are lifelong treatment as well. It's just
different modality,
a different modality. Yeah. But end-stage renal disease is the only disease that qualifies you for Medicare.
Right.
Everything else is you have to qualify through disability,
right.
except for end-stage renal disease. So it ends up being a very high cost on the Medicare trust.
Mm-hmm.
So early on in the 90s, the federal government really focused on improving efficiency and quality in dialysis. And I really got into quality improvement there and worked on some very large national campaigns for improving the efficacy of dialysis and working with patients. And really that's where my interest in quality improvement and redesigning the delivery of care came into play.
Right.
From those, I moved to national campaigns to improve outpatient settings, helping primary care practices adapt electronic health records. I was
That's an easy one to solve, right?
I was the director of the North Carolina Regional Extension Center for Health Information Technology. The program that I built worked with over 1,800 primary care practices, helping them to come up and redesign their care to include the use of technology. And that's really the work that I did through the AHEC in North Carolina. And so for 15 years, I was the associate director of the North Carolina AHEC program. So when the opportunity came to come to South Carolina to work with the AHEC program here, I was really excited to have this opportunity to come here. There's a very strong AHEC here. It's built off of four regional centers that are really embedded in those local communities across the state, really focused on the rural and underserved populations in this state, and have done tremendous work throughout the time. So I'm happy to be here. I've been in my position for almost a year now. And I'm really excited about all of the potential that there is here in South Carolina.
So tell our listeners what AHEC is and what you guys do with these centers and in the state. And
sure. So AHEC has been in the state of South Carolina for 48 years now. We were a part of the national pilot program for AHECs. So most states in the country have an AHEC program. It's built out of the HRSA at the federal level, and there's HRSA grant funding that comes into each state to be a part of the AHEC program. And so it is a requirement of the federal program that we be affiliated with a medical school. So 48 years ago, when AHEC was established in this state, we had one medical school. And that's why
The one in Charleston.
So that's why the South Carolina AHEC program fiscally functions out of the Medical University of South Carolina. But we do work with every college and university in the state. So as part of the national pilot, there were five pilots to really try to test this AHEC model. It was born out of the cooperative extension model for agriculture. And so it's really the concept of it is to really focus in rural and underserved settings to get out there and help those community-based providers make sure that they have the same access to evidence and the same quality of care that other providers do in metropolitan settings. So without having to pull them out of their practices.
So it's like a hub and spoke where you have a hub and you distribute it out.
It's very much a hub and spoke model. It's very much a, you know, bring the education out to them. And so it's evolved over the years. And so we very much focus on the pipeline to supporting the healthcare workforce in the state. And so it's really our focus and our determination to make sure that we are building and supporting the healthcare workforce that the state of South Carolina needs in order to have the high quality of care that its residents deserve.
So when you say pipeline, what do you mean by pipeline?
A pipeline for workforce really looks at how do we get enough students interested in a certain area or industry so that they can go through the years of education and training needed so that when they come out on the other end, they are a qualified and good, strong workforce.
So in this case, a healthcare professional of some sort.
A healthcare professional. And so we have programs that target mostly eighth grade and on up, but largely in high schools across the state to really help focus children who have maybe in a high school setting, and really when you speak to them about healthcare, their limited knowledge of healthcare and understanding of healthcare is probably just doctors and nurses.
Right.
And that's a great thing, because that probably means that they have not had a large interaction with healthcare, which with high schoolers, we don't want them to.
Right, not by that time. Right.
But we also need them to understand that, you know, there's a great diversity in the healthcare workforce.
Lots of opportunities and options.
There's lots of options for them. And we also need to help them understand that not all doctors are men, and not all nurses are women, and we need a diversity of gender and color and ethnicity and background. And so I think our...
So why is that diversity important, do you think?
Diversity is incredibly important so that people seeking healthcare feel that they can find a provider who meets an experience level that they're interested in.
So and similar whether, experiences and background.
Similar life experiences, similar background, and whether that is through ethnicity or cultural background, or whether that's just simply they grew up in a neighborhood near mine, or it could even be, you know, a gender that they are seeking, or it could be a skin color. It's okay for the patient to choose the provider that they would like.
Yeah.
But the problem that we have is we don't have a great enough diversity of backgrounds.
To allow that choice.
To allow that choice. Right. And when you look in rural settings, the diversity is even further off. And so 80% of the state of South Carolina is rural.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the diversity breakdown between what rural South Carolina looks like in diversity and what it looks like in its providers of healthcare, there's a great disparity there.
Right,
and we really work with high school students, especially in disadvantaged communities or in rural settings. We work with those high school students to help them understand that healthcare is a great career for you to get into, and it's a great career because it also is here in your local community.
Right. They can return home and practice there.
They can return home and practice there. And not all healthcare requires you to go through the extensive schooling that it takes to be a doctor or a nurse.
Right.
You can be a lab technician.
Mm-hmm.
You can be a certified nursing assistant. Mm-hmm. You can be, there's a lot of wonderful programs in our technical schools that can get you great preparation.
And those are usually offered a lot more locally and affordably.
They're offered locally. They're affordable. A lot of the students that we work with in the high schools have never had someone in their family go to college before.
Right.
So the idea of being able to take on a two-year college program and the debt that that incurs often is much more palatable, but it's also, it's seen in their eyes as much more achievable.
Sure, yeah.
And so helping them understand that you can be a nurse with a two-year degree, and you could be a nurse then to go on for a four-year degree, or you can be a nurse to go on and to become a nurse practitioner and provide care in your county.
Right.
And you can decide to do that along the way. It's a stackable degree and much more achievable for them. But the challenge that we have is that high school students are asked to make very big lifelong decisions at a very young age.
They are. My kid, when he entered high school, chose a major, basically.
Yes,
He entered the business academy and the information systems track. And I'm like, you're 14 years old. You don't know what you're going to do.
Right. And you don't know what you want to do, and you don't know all that's available to you. You
exactly.
only know what your corner of the world looks like that you grew up in. And so our high school programs really look to help these students, and we're really looking at underrepresented minority students and helping them to see a place in healthcare for them in the community where they want to live and return to, but also finding a way to do it. And if that means that they want to go straight to medical school, we will help them to do that. And we can even help them with MCAT preparation and all kinds of things.
Right.
But if that's intimidating to them, we can help them find a whole bunch of different ways because we need a whole bunch of support services within healthcare.
All those ancillary services.
Right. And, you know, when it comes to the delivery of healthcare, when you walk into a doctor's office, having someone sitting at the front desk that looks like you and looks like they may have a similar background or may understand your situation, that's just as important as having a provider who does.
Absolutely. And that sounds like you too.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. They speak your same, you know, language. They have, you know, the same sort of influences and those types of things. And I'm not saying it has to be a 100% match.
Sure.
But I do think that
some representation.
We all know that we feel more comfortable in a setting where there's other people that we feel understand us.
Sure. Where you feel part of the group.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's how we feed the pipeline, starting in very early in high school. And then some of our AHECs, we have 4 AHEC centers across the state.
And where are those?
Those are located geographically spread out across the state. So we have one in the upstate. It's located in Greenville and covers an 11-county area up in Greenville.
Okay.
We have one in Lancaster that covers from Columbia north and that 12-county area.
Mm-hmm.
We have one that's located in Florence, and so it covers the 11-county area in the northeastern part of our state. And then we have Lowcountry AHEC that's in Walterboro.
Okay.
And it covers basically that Lowcountry, you know, from the border of Georgia up halfway through
the
state.
You have an interesting mix of large urban to rural to middle of the road in Florence.
We do, yes. And it's interesting because it changes in our state. Our state's seeing a lot of changes. We're seeing growth, which is great economically. Right. But that growth, as we all know, is very, you know, limited to certain areas of the state. And
so certain pockets.
Right. It's certain pockets of the state. And so our mission of AHEC is to really target the rural and underserved areas of the state. But we do work with all counties, with all programs, and we just want to make sure that we need to pull from the people in the communities to get them to go out and serve in the communities that need it most. And so it's a huge opportunity for us to be able to work across the state. The state has such potential in these areas.
So I would imagine when you're working with these students in high schools, trying to expose them to different healthcare careers, it might be more difficult in rural areas because they may not have those services in their area. They may not have a hospital or those kinds of things. So how difficult is it to kind of expose them to inpatient services or radiology or even pharmacy if they don't have a pharmacist?
Well, we do it through different ways. So we have some online learning modules for them to work with. We work with their health sciences programs in their high schools as they exist. But we also can do simulation labs.
Interesting.
And so if they really don't have a local hospital for us to pull from, we can we'll go in and set up some simulation labs in their gymnasiums. We have the ability to help get them CPR certified. We can also do mental health first aid training. In the last year, we have helped students across the state in a multitude of high schools and different settings achieve over 14,000 hours of job shadowing.
Oh, that's great.
And so it really is a way for them to get in there and see it. And I
some
think
real it's world exposure to the job.
Some real world exposure that probably as a patient or certainly as a young person, I don't think that you would see. And I think that really helps them see it, helps them see a team structure within healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
It helps them see the different roles that I'm sure most people aren't aware of, but certainly high school students aren't aware of.
Right.
And I think the other thing too that we're able to do is help them to make the connection between how does some of your coursework play into this. And so we don't just teach every student about every health career. We get to know the students and find out what are they interested in. And so I'll be very honest. When I was in high school, chemistry was not my thing.
Right.
I did not enjoy chemistry. And never once did I connect that chemistry might lead to working in a pharmacy.
Right.
Right? So whether
nobody made that connection.
Because nobody made that connection for me, and it didn't make any sense. And chemistry wasn't a big thing for me. But I think that's one of those things is helping students understand, oh, you seem to really like these areas.
Right.
You know, here are some of the careers that can build off of some of the areas that you seem to enjoy.
But you need these building blocks to get
there. But you need these building blocks. And there's probably no one in their family that can really provide that understanding. If they don't have a pharmacist in their family, then they don't know the background to it.
Or even a college education, like you said.
Right, or even a college education. But they certainly don't know the difference between a pharmacy tech, a pharmacist, and then a PharmD.
Right.
And so these are
different levels.
These are all things in healthcare that we take for granted, but someone has to teach you them.
Right.
And so it's really just working with the students to do this. And we have other interesting things in our simulation labs of you know, you don't seem to look real well when mm-hmm. we're talking about blood. Perhaps phlebotomy is not
your,
good
your
for
choice.
You.
Right.
So it's really kind of helping the students understand that there's still opportunities in healthcare.
Right.
A lot of times we'll say, hey, you like computers? That's great. Guess what? Healthcare has a lot of need for people who like
Wide
computers.
Open. That's
yes.
right. That's right.
So, you know, just kind of helping them see the opportunities that are out there for them.
Yeah, I ended up, I always got the question coming out of high school, well, why aren't you going to medical school? My answer was, well, I sat in on a catheterization one day and almost passed out and realized blood and surgery is not my thing.
Not your thing, right?
And here I am doing what I do.
But here you are, right, in the middle of healthcare. Yeah, and so I think that's so important for students to see that and have
that
open
exposure.
To them. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So how many high schools across the state have health science programs like this that they can get that experience?
That's a really good question. I think there's typically one per county.
Okay.
I think some counties could have more than one.
Right. Like a Richland or Charleston County.
Right. And so we certainly target those programs so that as they need assistance, they certainly, we have a very close relationship with those schools and, you know, a lot of them will use our programs to, you know, to wrap around the programs that they have and those types of things. We do have an ability to offer credit for some of our programs that can then work for credit in those high schools.
Okay.
And we'll partner with them.
That's good.
But we also will work with high schools and high school students that don't have a health sciences program because it's not in every high school. And so a lot of
just
times
just as a wraparound to something
else. And so it's interesting. We're seeing sometimes the students will bring their friends into the program. So their friends might be from a different high school or a different community. And so we take our referrals from guidance counselors and from high school teachers and those types of things. But we also encourage them to bring their friends if they have someone who might be interested.
Positive peer pressure right there.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes.
That's interesting. Do you have a sense for how successful the pipeline is when you, for example, if you go into a rural high school health science program, expose these students to these programs, how many of them enroll, ultimately graduate with some sort of credential and end up working either back in their community or a similar community?
That's a great question. The outcomes in this area are you know, inherently difficult to track.
Yes.
We do participate in the National Clearinghouse, which is data on high school students. And so we do collect their information and we do try to track that the best that we can.
Sure.
One of the challenges is they start working with us as minors.
Right.
And then
it's
they
easy
progress.
To lose track.
Right.
Right.
And so, but we do track it. And we have some data, especially as our requirements with HRSA. So we do have some data on the outcomes of it. And the most that we have really are the stories.
The anecdotes, right.
Most of the time is the students who come through with us. Because South Carolina is not a really big state, as they come through and then as they work in healthcare, they come back to us for education. And that's part of our pipeline is that we help to build the workforce by working in high schools. Then we work with the colleges and universities in the state to help place students in health professions programs, all types of different health professions programs.
Right.
We help to place them out into rural communities for their clinical rotations.
Oh, okay.
So we want them to have a real experience in rural communities.
To see what delivery is like in that setting.
To see what delivery is like in that setting, to see what that is really like. And we also provide housing for them. So AHEC provides housing in rural communities so that students can live in the communities that they're serving. And it really is, that's true rural care.
Right.
So that they can go with a provider to a Friday night football game to understand that without a community doctor, this football game may not be happening.
Right.
We help them. They may go to migrant clinics with us on Saturday mornings.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a church diabetes group. Those types of things are very dependent on there being providers in those communities who are willing to support the communities.
And are part of the community as well.
Yes. And by having the students get placed for their clinical rotations through AHEC and using our housing and then having our AHEC staff there telling them what's going on.
Right.
You know, if you have a county fair, that's supported by your local EMT services.
Right.
That's supported with having doctors and nurses on hand, because when you have large groups of people around, you need healthcare.
Something's going to happen.
Right. So, so we place students out in those communities. And then after they graduate from their programs and they go out into work in the community-based care across the state, they need to continue their lifelong learning. So whether that's through their maintaining their licensure and certification, whether that's through, further evidence base of what's coming out, whether that's through a change in career, AHEC is what supports those professionals like that right through to retirement. So as our students come up through high school, really we're hoping that they'll work with AHEC all the way through the process.
Right.
And then as they go out and work into communities, we hope that they will pay back by taking students to work with them.
Continuing the cycle.
So my best day is when I'm out somewhere in the state and someone says, oh my gosh, I went to summer academy with you, or, you know, I did my high school program with you. So that, so we definitely collect those stories and have those, but we do have some outcomes data as well.
Right. Interesting. So I also understand you have a pretty active role in supporting our primary care workforce in the state through family medicine residencies. Is that correct?
That's correct. We really try to help medical schools in the state really identify and help those medical students choose a career in primary care.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, healthcare is filled with a whole bunch of subspecialties like oncology and dermatology, neurology, surgery. And all of those provisions of care are very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
But what our state really needs is primary care.
Right.
So
in local communities.
In local communities.
Right.
And really supporting that care. And so, and especially if you look at the data for rural communities, those communities, we're starting to see a real, what we call a maldistribution.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't say that we have a shortage of physicians in our state at all.
They're really just concentrated in non-rural areas.
They're just concentrated in certain areas of the state. And I'm sure that everybody could guess what areas in the state that most of the physicians live in. What we have is rural communities that have a real deficit of healthcare providers, and the providers that they need are primary care providers.
Right.
And so AHEC takes a large role in working with medical schools in the state to get medical students to choose primary care.
Right.
And so we have functions like Family Medicine Interest Day, where we try to highlight the really exciting things that can happen in primary care.
Right, and the impact.
And the scope of practice in rural primary care is much broader and much more exciting for physicians who practice in primary care in rural settings than in metropolitan areas.
Right. I had a friend who's a family medicine physician say that you better make sure you have a good set of wire clippers to get all the fish hooks out.
That's a good example.
And, he said, that's not, you don't understand that until you actually practice in the rural area.
Right. And it really is, we are finding, so family medicine is a good example, and South Carolina AHEC works with every family medicine residency in the state to really help train and produce the workforce that we need and try to help to keep those graduates from those residency programs in the state of South Carolina and optimally in a rural setting.
Right.
So family physicians are trained in what's called cradle to grave care, right? So they do everything from delivering babies all the way through end of life care.
Right.
It's a really exciting profession. And in rural communities, those providers, and there's a lot of studies that have just come out recently showing that the providers in rural communities are really able to work to their full scope of practice, more so than those in urban settings.
Right.
And I think that they really enjoy that. And so,
because every day is going to be very different.
Every day is going to be very different. Every patient's going to be very different.
Right.
But you also can have a mom come in with her three kids, and you can see three kids and mom
at the same time. And you might have delivered a couple of them.
Yes, exactly. And so it's a very rewarding career and something that our rural communities desperately need.
Right.
And so we do support those residency programs, both with funding, but also with educational programs and also helping to get students both whether it's through job shadowing, but mm-hmm. also in medical schools, really trying to get them to match up with a residency program that fits well for them.
Right. And so, you know, you're trying to fill gaps that way. Obviously, that probably doesn't fill the entire gap. So do you guys help out with any kind of outside recruitment and trying to get folks to come into rural areas that are practicing elsewhere or anything like that?
We do. We have a rural providers program that's funded by the state of South Carolina. So it's in addition to any federal programs that might be available for loan repayment and those types of things. This is specifically set aside for providers in South Carolina, where we have certain communities across the state that are targeted as a health professional shortage area. And those communities, if a provider chooses to practice in those communities, we can pay them an incentive payment for up to 4 years. And it's really a significant payment for them. They can use it to pay off medical school loans.
Right.
But if they don't have medical school loans because they may have done a military service or they may have done another federal program.
Like the Health Service Corps or something. Right.
I would love for them to use that money to put a down payment on a home.
Right, in that community.
Or a down payment on a practice
right.
in that community, because that sets roots and it helps them to stay and serve that community.
And helps them get over that hump of initial investment.
It does. It does.
That there.
And so our program is available for nurse practitioners, physician mm-hmm. assistants, and physicians as well.
MDs
and
DOs.
Yes. So it's exciting. We do have quite a few recipients across it, and it too has the data. Our data tracking on that is right now, I think we're showing about 85 or 87% retention.
Oh, wow. So you bring them in and they stay after that period of time.
We bring them in and they stay because we pay them over a period of years.
Right.
And so as long as they stay in that setting, they get their initial payment. It's almost like a bonus payment
right.
for them.
Right.
And then really by the end of that payment, they've built up a practice.
And they've established roots.
When they have enough patients in their practice to keep them there and keep it a viable business.
That's great. So we've kind of talked a little bit about some challenges in rural South Carolina. What have you seen in your work that you feel are the positives in rural South Carolina?
I think there are such positives to rural communities, and South Carolina might even have some greater opportunities for rural than mm-hmm. some of the other states that I've worked with. So having grown up rural and really worked in rural settings most of my career, I think the greatest thing about rural, and it's really a thing, the greatest thing out there about rural is truly the community. It's truly... You don't just serve a community, you are a part of a community.
Right.
And I think when you work in healthcare, you have your opportunity to see people at their very lowest and at their very highest points. And you're able to be there and helping them. And knowing that that's a member of your community, that that is someone who, you know, contributes to your community. And I just feel like there's such a greater sense of pride and belonging mm-hmm. in rural healthcare than I'm able to see in urban settings. I don't mean to knock urban settings, but because I think healthcare in itself has a piece of this. But I think understanding in a rural setting, you understand that if you can help this gentleman reduce his blood pressure mm-hmm. and maybe get his diabetes in control, that maybe he can get back to work, and that supports this family that you know that right. is working in this community.
They're maybe on the edge.
And so I just think effect. That you in rural healthcare, you get to know your patients mm-hmm. at a different level
right.
Than more you do theirs. And I think because there's fewer practices for them to go to, you get to know their family members. And
right.
So it is generational.
Mm-hmm.
So you do get to know grandparents and parents and children. But you also get to know aunts and uncles and cousins and how things all work. And sometimes
right.
I think as a rural provider, you're able to put pieces together a little bit better as to, I noticed that you're having trouble with this autoimmune disease. And I noticed that three of your cousins are as well.
Right.
Right.
So and there's something there.
There's a deeper connection there that I think that you get to enjoy. And I also feel that your connection with the community and the community's reliance upon the healthcare providers, and that's not just doctors, that's that's, you know, nurses and, you know, right. how many of these nurses go on field trips with high schools because they need a nurse to travel with them. And not every school has a nurse any longer. So, you know, I mean, there's a connection to the community that I think runs much deeper and it creates for a very rich and rewarding career. I think one of the great things about South Carolina is while our state is greater than 80% rural, I think the other thing that has a huge opportunity for us is that we are a very small state. And while we do have very rural areas and access and transportation and other issues are a great burden in rural areas, we are not Montana or Nebraska, right? And so while we do have very rural areas, we really have an opportunity in this state to bring broadband out to rural areas to really, I guess, attack and address these issues of access and these issues that are really impacting people's health and their lives. And I think that there's an exciting opportunity, an exciting time for us in rural care in South Carolina that I think there's some great gains that we can make. And part of it is because while we are very rural, we are also very small.
Right.
And I think that some of the challenges that face rural, we can really overcome some of those in South Carolina if we decide to.
Right. It's much more approachable and accessible.
It's much more approachable. You know, it doesn't mean that they aren't real challenges, you know, that are going to take some real solutions. Right. But yeah, we're not crossing great expanse of lands.
Correct, right. So we've talked a lot in previous episodes, too, about rural. You've mentioned 80% or so of our state is rural. How would you define rural?
That is an interesting question that can really have a lot of different angles to it.
Which is why I ask it.
Yeah. So I think that I'm trying to pick my answer, quite frankly. And because one of it is there are some very federal definitions of rural, and AHEC is certainly very
in tune with those.
Very in tune with those, very knowledgeable about them. We do use them. So when we're looking at our application process for people who would like some incentive payments and those types of things, we really do stick to a very solid definition as it's provided out there. And so we certainly use those, and some of those indices are changing as well.
Right.
And we're looking forward to those changing because I think especially when you get to HPSAs, health professional shortage areas and things like that, they're antiquated.
They need to be updated.
They need to be updated.
Yep, we're,
we're
fully aware of that.
They need to include all providers, those types of things. So, but I think instead of going what I think is the boring route with my answer of what those federal definitions are, I would say that AHEC and our mission would define rural and underserved as probably the majority of the state, with the exception of the key metropolitan areas that everyone can identify.
Right.
And so I don't really even like to look at it by county because I really think it has to get down to a much more granular level of what is rural and what is underserved.
Right.
Because I think you can have a hospital or a practice or a pharmacy that may be located in a not so rural setting that actually serves rural because they are on the edge of that metropolitan area, or they serve an underserved area of a community and things like that. And so I think that AHEC in our general work and our general programming really would take a very inclusive look at what we determine rural is, because I think it's easier in this state to just exclude those areas that don't need the help, that don't need more doctors, that don't need more services, and it's easier to just simply exclude those and include the rest.
Right. Well, thank you, Anne, for your time. This was wonderful, and that's all we have for today. If you'd like to find out more about AHEC and the work that they do, check the show notes. We'll put links to their website and to their programs there. Stay tuned for more episodes coming out soon. If you have ideas for guests you'd like to hear on our program, please let us know. We'd love to hear from you.
Thanks for listening to the Growing Rural Podcast. If you found the content valuable, please leave a rating on iTunes or Spotify so others can find us. For more information, please visit our website at sc.edu/ruralhealthcare or follow us on Twitter at sc_CRPH. This was recorded at the University of South Carolina School of Medicine in Columbia. It is edited and produced by Sean Riffle. Y'all take care.